Okay, good evening. Welcome back for those returning. Today's topic is why we learn Jewish philosophy, or why would one learn Jewish philosophy? And this, of course, makes sense to consider at the beginning of a discussion of Jewish philosophy, which is what this class is about. There's no formal mitzvah in the Torah, you know, you must learn Jewish philosophy. So, what is it that we're trying to do? What are we hoping to gain out of it? The first source we'll consider here is the Rambam. This is actually the first halacha in all of Mishneh Torah. Mishneh Torah is a compilation of Jewish law. The Rambam writes in his introduction to the Mishneh Torah that in Mishneh Torah I'm compiling all that one needs to know. In fact, he wrote that all you need to study is Tanakh and my Mishneh Torah, because in it everything that one needs to know is included. And he attempts to include all of the oral law, so all of the halachos based on the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi, Sifra, Sifrei, Tosefta, are included in a systematized way in the Mishneh Torah. It's one of the great ironies of history. Parenthetically, the Rambam wrote that it's not necessary, there'll be no need for any other book after this work. And there's probably been fewer books that have spawned a greater literature than the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. In fact, I saw in the other room there's a commentary on the Mishneh Torah, a compilation of commentaries of something like 54 commentaries on the Mishneh Torah alone. So the work that's supposed to not end all works is the work that spawned more works than any other work. Somebody told me, I don't know if this is true, but that there is no other work that's at least humanly written that has more commentaries than the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. So certainly one of the great ironies. This, of course, is a reflection of its greatness. Nobody writes commentaries. So this person believed that there are more commentaries on the Rambam than there is on Talmud. I don't know if that's true. If you look, though, ironically, in the Bar Ilan Responsa CD, so they have about 25 or 30 commentaries in the Talmud, and they have about 65 or 70 on the Rambam. Now, I don't think that's reflective of all of Torah literature, and my suspicion is, as you said, there's more in the Talmud than the Rambam, but it's rather remarkable. So, if the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam writes, is a book of halacha, and yet he begins the Mishneh Torah with a discussion of philosophy, and really of philosophy and science. The first four chapters of the Mishneh Torah discuss physics and metaphysics and the like. And this is because the Rambam actually felt that these are part of Torah. Torah, we sometimes view Torah in an overly narrow way, an overly narrow fashion. Could we get, thank you. And perhaps the Rambam had a broader view. Another time we'll have a chance to discuss that more fully. But the Rambam begins his Mishneh Torah with the following halacha. Yesod ha-yesodos ve'amud ha-chachmos leida sheyesha matzui rishon. The foundation of all foundations and the pillar of wisdom is to know that there is a first cause or a first existent. V'hu mamtzi kol ha-nimtza. And he is the cause for everything that exists. V'chol ha-nimtzaim mishamayim v'aretz u'mashe b'neim lo nimtzau ela me'amitas himatzo. And all that exists in the entire universe only exists because of the truth of his existence. Now, what the Rambam here is writing is that it's not simply enough to believe in God. And this will actually be our discussion next week. The Rambam writes that the mitzvah, which is typically known as emunah, belief, is actually a mitzvah of yediya, knowledge. It's not that there's a mitzvah to believe in God, but there's a mitzvah to know that God exists. How is it that one knows that God exists? According to the Rambam, the answer is through philosophical speculation. And thus, the basis of the most basic mitzvah is philosophy. So philosophy for the Rambam is exceedingly important. Now, to be sure, not everybody agrees with the Rambam about this. And next week, God willing, we're going to talk a little bit about the debate as to what is the nature of the mitzvah of emunah, how does one fulfill the mitzvah of emunah, and the like. Relates a lot to this week's parsha, actually.
Were you saying, as I worked in that, when he uses the term emunah, he's referring to philosophy?
He's referring to knowledge, and the way that one acquires knowledge about God's existence is through the study of philosophy.
Okay.
So
he has a specific term that he uses that is the equivalent of philosophy?
At times he uses the word philosophy, but here, what he does, we would define as philosophy. There is, so clearly then for the Rambam, philosophy is exceedingly important. Traditionally, though, even if philosophy was not something that was always valued, when I say traditionally, I mean going back before the Rambam, there were others who stressed the study of philosophy, like Rav Sadia Gaon, Rabbeinu Bachya, both of whom preceded the Rambam, and certainly those who followed the Rambam. Traditionally speaking, though, if you look at the Gemara, for example, you will not find philosophy in the way in which most people would use the term, but there's no doubt that the Gemara spends a lot of time on non-halachic matters. That section of the Gemara is typically known as Agadita, or Medrash Agadita. In other words, when you study Gemara, you will find that it's not just telling you the halachos, Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Erevin, tort law, but it's full of passages that are non-halachic, the Agadita, the Midrashim, the stories, the ideas, the values. And clearly then, the Torah expects us to know more and study more than just strictly the halacha. This actually relates a little bit to the Rashi that we talked about last week. Rashi at the beginning of the Torah asks, why did the Torah need to begin with Bereishis? Why didn't it begin with the first mitzvah, Chodesh Hazeh Lachem? Clearly the presumption in that question is that the Torah, at least the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, is meant to be primarily a book of laws. But as we talked about last week, that assumption isn't so simple. We studied the position of the Ramban and the like. So, the Gemara, by including all these other sections, by including the stories, and by including the lessons, is telling us that there's much more to Torah than simply the strict halacha. You find that in the stories in the Chumash, the stories in the Gemara, and so on and so forth. And in fact, if you look at the Sifrei, which is the fourth source on page 1, it says Sifrei Parshas Ekev, in the bolded text, the Medrash says, the Sifrei is the Medrash Halacha on Sefer Dvarim. Ritzonecha shetakir es misha hashamar v'haya ha'olam. If you want to recognize he who spoke and the world was created, meaning to say, if you want to recognize God, if you want to know God, if you want to understand God, Lamod Hagada, you have to learn Agadita. Shemitoch kach, because through this, Atama kiras HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you will come to recognize God, Umidabek bidrachav, and cling to his ways. So, the Medrash here is assuming or stating two things. First of all, it's stating that there's a value in recognizing God, in knowing God. Ritzon chashe takiras misha marvay olam. It's important to know God, to understand God, to recognize God. And the way in which you do that is through the study of Haggadah, or nowadays frequently the word machshava is used. Machshava referring to the study of Jewish thought. Not strictly halacha, but Jewish thought outside of halacha. And
what does the term Darshei Rishumot mean?
Darshei Rishumos are the people who write lists. And they said the following thing. It refers probably to a category of people that studied in a particular way in which they wrote lists of things. And this was their saying. And there are many other statements in Chazal to this effect. In Avos de Rabbi Nasan, which is the previous one, makes this point. The Avos de Rabbi Nasan, the previous source, is Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas Omer, Kol mi sheyesh biyado medrash ve'en biyado halachos, lo tam tam shel chachma. Kol mi sheyesh biyado halachos ve'en biyado medrash, lo tam tam shel yiraschet. Someone who knows medrash, but doesn't know halacha, lacks chachma. Someone who knows halacha but lacks medrash lacks yirashchet. So here we see the medrash telling us that someone who only knows halacha, not agadita, is incomplete, and someone who only knows agadita, not halacha, is likewise incomplete. And if we put these two sources together, what we can detect is that there are two major themes, two major purposes in terms of why one would study agadita, why one would study medrash. The first one, in this Avos Rabbi Nasan, is yirashchet, meaning to say, it inspires a person. One should study medrash because it's inspiring, it's like studying Musar, it's going to help a person fear God, love God, etc., etc. So that's one value in studying what we'll call machshava, or studying philosophy and the like. The second purpose that we see in Parshas Ekev in the Sifrei is that the purpose is to understand God. Now, when we speak of understanding God, when the Medrash says you want to understand God, you should study Agada, what do we mean by understanding God? So the first thing we have to keep in mind is that we can't really understand God. We can't understand God because God is infinite and we are finite. It is beyond our intellectual capacity to understand the infinite, to understand God. If we were to fully understand God, we would be God, as it were. So that's impossible. So one might have had the approach that, well, since I can't understand God, then what's the point of even trying? Why should I try to understand God? I could never fully understand God. However, there are many psukim that tell us that this isn't the case, that even though it's true we could never fully comprehend God's essence, that's beyond us, but we should try our best to understand God, to arrive at the truth to the best of our ability. And that is what this medrash is saying. There are many psukim to this effect. If you want an example, here I have at the bottom of page 1, going over to page 2, 5 psukim that are quoted. These are psukim from the Chovos HaLevavos that stress this idea. Biadata hayom vashevosa elavavecha. V'ata shlomo b'ni. Da es elokei avicha. This is from David HaMelech's final address, as it were. He addresses the nation before his death, instructing people about the succession that Shlomo is going to take over. He's going to build the Beis HaMikdash. And what is David's advice to Shlomo? Da es Elokei Avicha. Know the God of your father. Know. Understand. The Pasuk says, De'u ki ani ki Hashem hu Elokim. Know it. As Giveyu Kiyadashimi, I will exalt him, the Pasuk in Tilim says, because he knows my name. Kiim Bizos Yishalel Hamishalal. That's a bad comma. Haskel Viadoa Usi. That's the Pasuk from Yirmiyahu. We'll get to it later. The Pasuk there says, what should a person take pride in? Not in wealth, not in gvura and strength, but rather in what? In knowledge of God. Now, to be sure, these psukim take on different meanings when you look at different thinkers. For example, how does a person come to know God? So there were those who said, like the Rambam, rationalists, that a person comes to know God through the study of philosophy. Others who have a more mystical approach, let's say, for example, the Ramban, but there are many others, say no. How is it that one comes to have an understanding of God? Through the study of mysticism, through the study of Kabbalah. Kabbalah is a tradition, and that's how one comes to understand God. So different thinkers will have different approaches as to how one properly fulfills this obligation, this mitzvah of understanding and knowing God. But almost everybody agrees that there is such a concept. In fact, the Gemara in one place goes so far as to say that Dvarim Kitanim are Havayos Dabai Virava, small things are the discussions, the back and forth of Abaye and Rava, meaning the Shakel of Atariya of the Gemara, and Dvarim Gedolim, what are great things? Those are Maaseh Vereishis and Maaseh Merkava. What do Maaseh Vereishis and Maaseh Merkava mean? So again, as we mentioned last week, for mystics, they refer to mysticism. For rationalists, it refers to science and philosophy. But whatever your approach, everybody agrees that at least in some point in the development of a Torah personality, it's important to try to understand esoteric wisdom, to try to understand God. Someone who simply focuses exclusively on halacha and the Talmud Bavli, the halachic sections and the like, is missing something. One should try to understand God through the esoteric wisdom, and whatever that means, so there are different approaches. As we also mentioned last week, there are dangers in doing so. There are limitations. These things shouldn't be studied until one has a basic foundation in halacha. The Rambam, both in Mishneh Torah, as well as in his introduction to the guide, writes that a person should not study science and philosophy until they have a basic background of the what we call Torah's Hanigla, the revealed Torah, the halacha. He calls it the lechem ubasar, the bread and the meat. Right? Before you go on to dessert, as much as we like dessert, you have to fill yourself up first on meat and bread, and then you could have dessert. So, there are dangers, and the Rama writes in the Tshuva that there are dangers both in studying philosophy, and there's dangers in studying Kabbalah. Rama in the Tshuva writes that he thinks it's more dangerous to study Kabbalah than there is to study philosophy. Because in Kabbalah, if you don't know how to properly understand it, it seems like it's conveying heretical ideas. You read a Sefer Kabbalah and it talks about the hands of God and the arms of God and his left side and his right side and the higher levels and the lower levels and his spheros. It's very problematic if you don't have the proper background. So there is a danger, to be sure, but at the same time, it's also a great mitzvah. Yes?
Is the focus on the elite intellects in being encouraged to do this, or is this being broadened to people who, more ordinary people who are required to understand halacha and are required to learn all the time anyway?
Mm-hmm.
So how does right. that tension
that is fulfilled? That is an excellent, excellent question. And there's no doubt that when you look at many of the medieval works, you get the impression that there's a very elitist perspective. So, very briefly, I believe the answer is that everybody should attempt to reach this level. Now, because there's a requirement for certain prerequisites, inevitably, it's going to be the case that not everybody is going to get there. If the prerequisite for studying philosophy or studying Kabbalah is basic knowledge of Torah Sanigla, the halacha, the revealed Torah, and the like, so not everybody is going to get past the prerequisites. And therefore, in a certain sense, then, yes, it's elitist. It's only the people that are ready for it that are going to study it. But at the same time, it's not elitist, it's democratic in the sense that anyone should be able to reach this and everyone should strive for it. So yes and no. And I think the word you used, the word tension, quite accurately captures it. On the one hand, everybody should strive for it, but on the other hand, on a practical level, it's not going to be something that everybody will achieve. The Medrash, speaking to the point you just made, we'll look at one source on page 2. There's a Medrash in Mishlei. So the Medrash says, as it were, when a person comes up to Shamayim, God will ask them questions. So it says, Ba mishiyesh bo agada, HaKadosh Baruch Hu omer lo b'ni talmud lo lamadita. If someone comes in, they have great knowledge in Agadita, but they don't have knowledge in Talmud, so God will say, well, you know a lot of Agadita, why didn't you study Talmud? But the reverse question is also asked. So So there's an expectation that on some level, everybody should have some of this. And generally speaking, it's important to keep in mind that when it comes to the study of Torah, and ultimately this is a part of Talmud Torah, the Gemara says that Chayav Adam Lilmod B'makom Shalibo Chafetz. A person should study in the place that he desires. In other words, you should learn what you enjoy learning. This is in fact Paskin twice in Shulchan Aruch. Now, that doesn't mean that you should only learn what you enjoy learning, but because it's important to have breadth, and it's important, if a person only studies exclusively what they like, they'll never even achieve greatness in that very narrow area because they won't have the breadth to properly appreciate it. But at the same time, a person should study and focus on the things that they enjoy learning. Torah is very broad, and it's legitimate for a person to say, well, I really like halacha, so I'm going to focus on halacha. I really like Gemara, so I'm going to focus on Gemara. I really like philosophy, I'm going to focus on philosophy.
Where are those references?
It's in Maseches Avodah Zarah. So, that is part A. So part A of tonight's shiur is that there exists a mitzvah, a very positive value in doing so. Part B is going to be about the nature of agadita, and part C, hopefully we'll get there, is going to be about the nature of philosophy. Because agadita is somewhat different than philosophy. In terms of the nature of agadita, so I'd like to speak a little bit about the statements, the section of Torah which is called agadita. There are a number of statements, both in the Yerushalmi as well as in the literature of the Gaonim, which indicate that agadita somehow has a lower value. It's on a lesser level than other areas of Torah. One example of this is the Talmud Yerushalmi on the bottom of page 2. The Talmud says, we'll just read the bolded text for now, Ein lemeidin lo min ha-halachos v'lo min ha-gados v'lo min ha-tosafos ela min ha-talmud. One cannot learn from halachos, so that either means halach l'moshim mi-sinai, or places where the Mishnah says halacha. That's not our issue for now. V'lo min ha-gados, and not from agada, v'lo min ha-tosafos, that's referring to Tosafta. So what does it mean when it says you can't learn from Haggados, you can't learn from agadita? So one interpretation is that means you can't derive halacha from agadic statements. This is actually a debate among the Achronim, the nature of this rule. In other words, the Gemara is saying that, let's say there is a agadic story, a story in the Gemara that tells about a certain person. Can you derive practical normative halacha from that? That's one interpretation of what this Yerushalmi is saying. However, take a look on page 3, we'll look at a statement from Rav Shri Ragon. Rav Shri Ragon writes the following. Second source. Hani mili dinafki mipsuki umikri medrash v'agada. These things that are derived from sukkim and called medrash v'agada, meaning to say the midrashim go ahead and they'll read a pasuk and then they'll tell us all sorts of stories that relate to the pasuk. So these things are called agada, or medrash and agada, and the Rashi Ragon says these are umdina ninhu. Umdina is a hard word to translate. We'll call it speculation for now. These things are speculation. Lachein ein somchan al agada. Since they are only speculation, one does not rely upon agada. Now what does that mean, we don't rely upon it? Again, we'll get back to this in a moment. V'amru ein lemeidim min agados. Therefore, the Yerushalmi says, what we just saw, we don't learn from agada. V'nachon mehen mashe mischazik min ha-seichel o min ha-mikra. Better than them is things, knowledge that we know either from our intellect or from the psukim. Those things nikabel mehem v'ein sof etichla la-agados. So this statement sounds like perhaps he's deriding agadic statements. They're not so great. They're speculation. We don't learn from them, and the like. There are other statements in the Gaonim to a similar effect. On page 2 and 3 of the source books, you'll see them. And even Rishonim seem to say similar such statements. One of the most famous examples of a statement is in the famous debate between the debate of Ramban and Pablo Christiani. That was, of course, there were many, many medieval debates concerning Christianity and the like. They were not level playing fields, to say the least. In fact, even though the Ramban demanded certain concessions before he participated in that debate, the result of the debate was that he was thrown out of Spain. Nevertheless, the Ramban was asked the following. There is a certain medrash that indicates that the Mashiach has already come. And the Christians said, this is a proof that Jesus was the Messiah, and he's already come, and what are you doing waiting for the Messiah? According to your own Torah, the Messiah already came. So what is the Ramban going to respond to such a statement? So the Ramban writes, on page 4, second line, V'eini ma'amin kach, I don't believe it. And starting on the fifth line, he tells him as follows. Anachnu, yesh lanu shlosha minim shel sfarim. We, the Jewish people, have three types of books. There are three genres of literature. Ha'echad, hu ha'bablia. That's a Bible, right? So one is called Bible. V'kulanu ma'aminim bo emuna shleiman. Certainly all of us accept this with full belief. V'asheni, hu nikra Talmud. V'hu, perush l'mitzvos ha'Torah. The second section is what we call Talmud, and this is an explanation of the mitzvos of the Torah. In other words, the Bible tells us you have to keep Shabbos. How do you know the details of those laws? You look in the Talmud. Ki b'Torah yesh taryag mitzvos. In the Torah there are 613 mitzvos. Ve'en ba'achas shelo nisparsha b'Talmud. And every single one of them is explained in the Talmud. V'anachnu ma'aminim bo b'feirush ha'mitzvos. We believe in the Talmud. We rely on the Talmud with respect to the interpretation of the mitzvos. Od yesh lanu sefer shlishi hanikra medrash. There's a third genre, which is called medrash. Rotze lomar, sermonis, sermons. Kimo shem yamod ha-hagmon v'yaseh sermon. Like someone gets up and he gives a sermon. Ve'echad min ha-shomim ha-yatov b'ena v'kotvau. And somebody heard the sermon and he liked it, so they wrote it down. That's what the medrash is. V'zeh sefer mishi amin botov. When it comes to this genre, if you believe in it, good. Umisha lo yamin bo, lo yazik. And if you don't believe in it, ishta ze geferlach. Not such a bad, big deal. Now, what it seems like he's saying is, this genre, agada, medrash, you don't have to accept them. If you like them, good. If you don't, not. Maybe it's meant in the statement along the lines of the statements of the Gonim. On the other hand, you could say, absolutely not. You can't prove anything from here. The Ramban didn't think that was the truth, but he knew that if he tried to explain what the Medrash, which indicates that Mashiach already came, really means, it would not be something that was accepted. And therefore, as a tactic in a debate, he was better off saying, it's a Medrash, I don't have to answer questions from Midrashim. Midrashim, take it or leave it, I don't accept that Medrash. That actually raises another important question, which is certainly a topic on its own right, which is one ever allowed to distort Torah, even to save one's life? There was an opinion, this is the view of the Maharshal. Maharshal held that one is not allowed to distort Torah, and one has to offer their life before they distort Torah. If somebody comes to you and says, what does the Gemara say about X? And you know that if you tell them the truth, they're going to kill you. You still have to tell them the truth. Not everybody agrees to that, Maharshal. If you're going to say that the Ramban here is being dismissive, apparently he doesn't agree with that psak of the Maharshal. But one way or the other, here we have a similar statement. The Rambam in a tshuva, this is a tshuva written to Pinchas Hadayan, seems to say a similar idea. The Ramban says as follows. He was asked by a medrash relating to this past week's parsha about Yotz Eteva, and he writes, sorry, on page 4, where it says Tshuvas HaRambam. Kol osan advarim divrei agada hein. All those things are divrei agada. Vein makshin ba'agada. You don't ask question from agada. V'chi divrei kabbalah hein, omili desvara. Are they based on a tradition or based on the intellect? Skipping. Ela kol echad ve'echad me'ayen b'sefer kefi ma'shi'ei ra'elo b'davar. Bepasuk. Kefi ma she'ira'elo bo. A person looks at a pasuk and they interpret it as they see fit. Ve'en b'zeh divrei kabbal. There's no tradition. Ve'lo asur ve'lo mutar. Ve'lo din min ha'dinin. U'lefikach ein ma'akshin b'han. Again, seemingly similar to the Gaonic statements. Okay. So, that is the Rambam. Along similar lines, the Rambam says in the Sefer Mor Nevuchim, this is in his introduction, he says, what is the purpose of the Sefer Mor Nevuchim? So, the purpose of the Guide to the Perplexed is actually, it's not strictly speaking a book of philosophy, though hopefully over the course of the year we'll see a lot of it. The Guide to the Perplexed is a book which interprets problematic words in the Torah. So, for example, he spends a lot of time explaining the anthropomorphic words in the Torah, places where the Torah implies that God, for example, has a physical body. The Rambam proves that he doesn't have a physical body, and then he needs to explain all the verses that indicate that he does and why they say what they do and so on and so forth. Though in the course of explaining what all these words mean, he discusses a lot of philosophy, he offers reasons for mitzvos and the like. So the Rambam writes that originally my plan was actually to write a book on statements in the Agadita which contradict logic. But I decided that there's not such a need for such a book. Why? Because, and here you have an example of an elitist-sounding statement, like you mentioned before. He says, for the masses, they're not bothered by such statements anyway. In other words, you have a medrash that talks about fantastic events, they contradict logic, so most people don't even worry about that. And for the intellectual people, so then they will have one of two reactions. Either they'll say, this must mean something else and I don't understand it, or they'll say, this makes no sense, and they'll dismiss it. Even if they choose the latter option, which is the incorrect option, nishta zegefer loch, so they dismiss it. It's not such a big deal. So, from these statements, it would seem that the Rambam also has a rather dismissive view of Agadita. Now, I would like to suggest the following. This is indeed how some people have understood the Rambam, and I think that this is the incorrect reading of the Rambam.
Incorrect
reading of the Ramban. We're going to go ahead in a couple of moments and see the perspective of the Maharal. And in my view, and I hopefully will have time to prove this to you tonight, the Rambam is, for the most part, in agreement with the Maharal. The Rambam actually believes that as he says explicitly, that the words of Agadita reflect great wisdom, and through it, Chazal impart hidden wisdom, the truth. When you have a Agadic statement that seems to be fantastic and unreasonable, we have to go ahead and understand that it's metaphorical, it's allegorical, it's telling me something else. But the truth of the matter is that Agadic statements are true and they contain wisdom. The Maharal and the Rambam may disagree about what the status of a person who rejects Agadita is. According to the Rambam, as we said, and as we just read, such a person is making a mistake. They are, when they reject Agadic statements because they don't understand them, so they're making a mistake. Whereas according to the Maharal, someone who rejects Agadic statements is a heretic, is a kofer. So perhaps they disagree about that point. And certainly on a practical level, they may disagree as to how you interpret a certain statement. A Rambam might interpret a statement in the Agadita metaphorically based on philosophical considerations, whereas the Maharal will take a different approach. But fundamentally, they both agree with the idea that it is through statements of the Agadita that Chazal convey deep, profound and esoteric wisdom. And then the question, of course, arises, how do we interpret the statements of the Gaonim and the statements of the Yerushalmi? So for that, we're going to turn to the Maharal. Once again, like last week, we're going to quote a section from the Maharal's Ber HaGola. This is on page 5, it begins. But I think we'll read from the top of page 6. And the Maharal writes as follows. Amnam Asher Ratza Litlos Be'ilana Rav Riva Kadisha. Okay, the Maharal here is responding to the works of someone named Rabbi Azariah de Rossi. Azariah de Rossi wrote a couple of books. One of them was called Me'or Einayim, and in them he critiques the seemingly exaggerated statements made by Chazal. And he concludes that these statements should be dismissed, and he bases his position on the statements in the Gaonim and the Yerushalmi, which we read previously. So the Maharal is now responding to that critique. Amnam, top of page 6. Asher ratza litlot be'ilana rav riva kadisha. De Rossi, who tried to rest his position upon the great tree, meaning Roshri Ragon and Rav Haigon, shenimta b'shem Roshri Ragon, hine lo yivin divrei ha-gaon. He didn't actually correctly understand the statement of the Gaon. Shem haya kavanas Rav Shri Ragon kemo shevin. If Rav de Rossi was correct in his understanding of Rav Shri Ragon, ki divrei agada enam brurim, rakem lefia machshava, the ideas of the agada are not clear, they're just made up. Lama haya lo lomar, hani mili denafka migo psuka. These are things that emerge from a pasuk. In other words, what was the statement? The statement was, these things that emerge from a pasuk are umdina, are speculation. V'chi lo nimtza gadot rak otam sheyotzim min haktuvim? Are the only types of agadata the statements that emerge from the psukim? V'lama lo kalal kol agada lomar umdinahu? Why didn't he include all statements and say, these are umdina, these are speculation? And that's why he misunderstood his statement. Ki hagaon zal balomar, Rashi Ragon was coming to say, she'al yomar ki kasher darshu davar min hamikra, when they extrapolate a message from the pasuk, v'hem be'emes rechokim min lashon hamikra, and these are indeed very far and distant from the interpretation of the pasuk. Valzamar, about this he said, kihem umdina, that they are speculation. Rotzelomar, hasvar mechayevze, the intellect obligates this, rak shesamchu ha'inyan ala kasav, but they connected the concept, the idea, upon the pasuk. Vim lo haya das vesavara mechayev osam, and if knowledge, if the intellect didn't convince us that this idea was true, lo haru darshim osam min hamikra, they would not have derived them from the pasuk. So here the Maharal is telling us a very important lesson. How do we deal with seemingly far-fetched interpretations of the psukim? The psukim, the far-fetched interpretations of the psukim that could be found in Medrash, many of them are quoted in Rashi and the like. And these interpretations seem to be quite different from the simple meaning of the verses. So what the Maharal says is the following. These ideas, the concepts in the Medrash, are actually made up. But they are make sense, misvara. We have a number of avenues, ways in which we know something. We might know something because of received tradition, because it was told to us in the Torah, because the prophet told us and the like, and it was passed on. But another method, and a legitimate method of knowledge, is svara, our intellect. The intellect, and I'd like to, at another point in time, expand upon this idea, but the intellect is a tool that God gave us to arrive at the understanding of the truth. We shouldn't be afraid to use our own mind. God gave us a mind, and he gave it to us with the expectation that we would use it. So, if when you find an example of an interpretation of a pasuk, which seems far-fetched. That's because Chazal arrived at the idea on their own, and then they thought to connect it to a pasuk. So it might indeed be a tenuous connection, but that's because they did not arrive at the idea from the pasuk. They arrived at the idea independently, and then they sought to connect it to a pasuk. It's actually very...
Sounds like asmachta.
Exactly. And asmachta is something that we have in halachic literature. Sometimes, for example, you'll find in the Gemara. The Gemara will ask, what is the source for a law in the pasuk? And the problem with that statement is as follows. It's a rabbinic law, right? How do we know Hanukkah in the Torah? Well, we have a problem. The problem is that Hanukkah is a rabbinic invention. So what are you doing looking for a pasuk in the Torah? And the answer is that it's an asmachta. An asmachta is a hook, a way in which we could perhaps see an allusion to this rabbinic concept in the Torah. It's not what the psukim mean. So along similar lines, the Maral is saying that's the way in which you should interpret some of these far-fetched agadic statements. It's not that the Medrash, the authors of the Medrash, looked at the psukim and said, oh, I see in the psukim this idea. Rather, they had an idea, and they attached it to the psukim. And that's what we mean when we say that they are umdana. Okay? But that doesn't mean in any way that they're of lesser value. It's like, I once remember hearing from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, someone asked him, what value do you see in Chassidische Wartlach? Chassidische Wartlach. And he basically made the same point. They, Chassidische Wartlach are ideas that make a lot of sense on their own, at least that's what the Chassidische Rebbe thought, and the connection to the Pasuk is a hook. You know, he had this idea, he wanted to talk about it, he thought it was true, and since it was Parshas Lech Lecha, he showed how you could see it in Parshas Lech Lecha. That's one thing that the Maral says. A second thing he says is the following, skipping a little down to the next section of the bold. Ulefikach ein lismoch al pshat divrei agada, v'chi ba'atzmo mi she'amru ein meshivin al agada, ki efshar ha'omer osa amru al derech ne'alam, ulefikach ein meshivin ve'ein makshin be'agada lipshuta. What does the Yerushalmi mean when the Yerushalmi says and when the Gaonim say you can't ask a kasha from agadata? It doesn't mean, like De Rossi thinks, that because it's unimportant, because it's not something you have to accept. Rather, what it means is you can't understand or interpret agadic statements literally. Oftentimes, they are meant to be understood allegorically. It's a means by which they hide messages. And therefore, because it can't necessarily be understood literally or simply, you can't ask a kasha on me from an agadic statement, because I could simply respond, you're misunderstanding the agadic statement. This is what it really means. Don't interpret it your way, interpret it this way. Don't read it so literally. Maybe it's telling me something else. Why is it that Chazal would speak in such a cryptic way? Why is it that they would include these messages in allegories? Why don't they just tell it to us directly? So the Ramchal writes, and the Maral as well, and Rambam as well, that this is the way the Ramchal puts it. Originally, the oral law was actually oral, right? That's why it's called Torah Shebaal Peh. It wasn't written down. At a certain point in time, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi composed the Mishnah. Why did he write it down? So the Gemara says, Eis lasos l'Hashem heferu sarasecha, because if they didn't write down the oral law, it would have been lost. The way that Rambam explains is it was a time of persecution, it was a time when it was against the law to study Torah, and people were beginning to forget it. And they understood that if they didn't write it down, it would be forgotten. Well, that's fine when it comes to halacha, but when it comes to the esoteric wisdom, these things can't be written down explicitly. And the reason is, as we said before, you're not allowed to publicly teach esoteric wisdom. Why? Because it's dangerous. That being the case, they had to figure out a way to write it down, but not make it public knowledge. So the way in which they did that was hide the ideas within Agada. And therefore, the Agada teaches this esoteric wisdom, but it conveys it in secretive ways. And that's why it's so difficult to understand at times. But if you understand it literally, then oftentimes you're missing the boat, you're missing the point. And that might be what the Ramban meant. The Ramban said, you can't ask a kasha on me from a medrash because you're interpreting the medrash one way, but that's the incorrect interpretation. It's not meant to be understood literally. It's meant to teach me something else. Looks like we're about out of time, and we didn't quite get to the third section of tonight's shiur, but perhaps, Be'ezus Hashem, another time we will have a chance to continue this. So we will pick up, God willing, next week, same time, same place. Have a good evening. Thank you so much.